Last summer, following the death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police, members of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus put forth a long list of reforms to curb racism in the criminal justice system. Many State House observers didn't expect the proposals to gain much traction, thanks to Hoosiers' affinity for law and order conservatism and the all-consuming nature of the ongoing battle against COVID-19. Those observers were wrong. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll look at a sweeping reform package that's moving through the General Assembly with not only bipartisan backing, but also the support of law enforcement agencies across the state. So don't go away. Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house. This week, members of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus held a virtual news conference to promote various policing reform measures and to voice their unbridled support for House Bill 1006, a wide-ranging package that would boost law enforcement transparency, accountability, and, they hope, credibility. We'll use that event as a jumping-off point in our discussion with Republican Representative Greg Steuerwald of Avon, House Majority Caucus Chair and author of House Bill 1006. Democratic Representative Robin Shackelford of Indianapolis, a co-author of that bill. Democratic Representative Mitch Gore of Indianapolis, a captain in the Marion County Sheriff's Office. And Samantha Baran, a graduate student at Indiana University, Purdue University at Indianapolis. I thank you all for being here for this discussion. Let me start with you, Representative Steuerwald. This bill, 1006, that you and your one of your co-authors, they're both sitting here, it's unusual in a lot of ways, but even in this sort of hypercharged partisan atmosphere in which we all seem to live now. This passed out of courts and criminal code on a vote of 11-0. That was 2 weeks ago. And then this week it passed out of House Ways and Means Committee 23-0. What's going on here?
Well, I'm in constant contact with law enforcement on a number of different issues. And, you know, when some of the troubles arose last summer, we began a conversation. And I gathered all law enforcement from Sheriff's Association, police chiefs, FOP, state police, members of the ILEA out in the Law Enforcement Academy. And we began a discussion. And I asked them, what can the General Assembly do to enhance law enforcement in Indiana so you can better serve the public?
I know you've talked about this being not necessarily reform as much as, your word, an enhancement.
That's exactly right. I asked them, how can we enhance your efforts? Because we have some really great people who are wanting to do the best job possible. So that led into many, many discussions. And over the course of time, there were three general areas that they said what they need the most. They said everything begins with the best training. They have a great curriculum. But the facilities that was built in Plainfield back in the 70s is just long overdue. They need better equipment. They need better means by which to train. So we looked at the training aspect, exactly what are parts of the training curriculum. They said we need equipment. We need police and body cams. And by the way, all law enforcement agreed with everything we're doing.
Yeah, I want to get to that. That's part of the unusual aspect, I'd say, of this whole push.
Right. In the budget, there'll be money for local units of government to apply for a grant if they don't already have car and body cams.
And that was just inserted, I believe, in Ways and Means as an amendment, that the extra money for funding, correct?
That was for the training facility.
The training facility, okay.
That was $70 million for the training facility, and it has five locations throughout Indiana.
Okay.
And then the last major topic was all law enforcement agreed that we needed to do something with the rogue or wandering officer. So that's a major part of the bill, too.
And certainly the last one for you in this round here. What was the one thing, or was there one thing, that triggered these discussions? You mentioned this past summer there was a lot of upheaval. Was it the death of George Floyd? Was it the flurry of other high-profile deaths at the hands of law enforcement across the country? What was it that got you mobilized and in organizing this? You had better things to do this summer. You probably could have stayed at home with your mask and quarantine.
It was a collective everything that happened. There was no one major event, but they were, when things happened, they were all ready to go. All law enforcement ready to go. They said, let's tackle this issue, let's get on top of it, and let's make Indiana the best we can make it.
Robin Shackelford, let's go back to this past summer. It seems maybe a million years ago now with so much society has been through, but because of the death of George Floyd and some of the others whose names certainly we could go through a litany here of names that have sort of entered the lexicon, you and your organization, I should point out, you are chair currently of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus. Mm-hmm. Early summer, as soon as some of these things happened, you issued a call for action, called on the governor. Subsequent to that, later part of the summer, you issued, I think, 36 recommendations in terms of policing reform.
Yes.
Did you think, and I'll be honest, I mentioned in the introduction that a lot of state house observers didn't think this would necessarily gain as much traction as it has, and I'll put myself in that group. I won't just leave it anonymous, state house observers. Are you surprised?
Well, I would say I'm an optimistic person, and because it was such a perfect storm this summer, you had people in the house due to the pandemic. They got to see firsthand of our community of blacks getting killed on their TV screens. And then they also got to see the protesters. People came out in groves to protest for equality. So we went to the speaker after all the presentations, the press conferences, and we said either there needs to be a task force put together immediately, like we did for the health disparities, but something needs to be done so we can start working on this now. At that point, he said, I'll reach out to Representative Storwell. I'll put him in charge. You guys can work with him and see what can we come up with as we're working through the summer. He wasn't a big fan of putting together a task force, but I'm actually excited that he did give it to Representative Storwell, because from that point on, we also continued to meet with the law enforcement, with the prosecutors, with the judges, with the community, with the protesters, getting their input and trying to figure out where can we all compromise on these issues. And so 1006 is a result of the compromise.
I'm intrigued by the notion that perhaps this was furthered, or the statewide impetus can be traced in some ways to people staying at home because of COVID-19 and watching. Is that really a factor? I mean, oftentimes this issue seems to me not so much R versus D as much as urban versus rural nationally. Had there been no COVID, are you saying that this might not have been as far along as it is now? Is it as simple as that?
I wouldn't say it's as simple as that, but I would go there, because a lot of the 36 bills that we're actually pushing, we've pushed for years. So we've been pushing these ideals for several years. But because you had COVID, because you had people tuned in and at home, even when we met with the speaker, he had been out campaigning, and he said people in his neighborhood said they wanted to see a change, and they wanted to make sure that everybody had an equal playing field. So I would say, because now the world has turned into more virtual and you can see things immediately, and they got to see George Floyd being murdered on the ground. They got to see Breonna Taylor and the cops coming in. So with all the video footage, not only did they get to see it, but they felt it. And then they demanded a change.
Mitch Gore, you've got a perspective, perhaps a vantage point unlike many others, in that you hear from constituents that you represent there in the east and southeast side of Indianapolis, and also you're a member of law enforcement. You're a captain in the Marin County Sheriff's Office. We know that everybody has lined up, and everybody, let's say that all of the officialdom, let's say, of organized labor within law enforcement, Fraternal Order of Police, we've seen the Association of Chiefs of Police in the state, the County Sheriff's Association, they've all said we're for it. What do you hear from rank and file? Is there the clamor within law enforcement rank and file members that seems to be welling up at the top echelons, really?
Yeah, absolutely. And while I can't speak for the Marion County Sheriff's Office, speaking personally and after speaking with several of my colleagues, being a freshman, I'm, still extremely optimistic about some of these things. And you'd mentioned earlier if Representative Shackelford was surprised. I wasn't surprised, because there has been a clamoring for several of these things among conscientious law enforcement officers for a number of years. Generally, we're strongly in favor of body cameras. not only because it happens to reduce complaints against officers significantly, but it gives people a glimpse into what officers deal with on the street. And if you ask most law enforcement officers that are telling you the truth, everybody knows that one officer that probably shouldn't be on the force. And so having this process to decertify bad actors is absolutely critical, and I would say generally every conscientious law enforcement officer is strongly in favor of this legislation, and that just goes to Representative Sturwald's point that this has support from the state FOP, the Indiana Police State Police Alliance, and of course the Indiana Sheriff's Association and the police chiefs. So there has been a clamoring, yes.
Several people testifying, in fact, I think state police made a point of how unusual it is to stand up there and say, I can't believe I'm saying this effectively, but I agree with everything in this bill. Samantha Baran, now I know you're speaking for yourself. You're here in your capacity as a student and so forth, but I should point out you were recommended to us by Black Lives Matter, ND 10 Black Lives Matter, so I know you're not speaking for them, but just to put context to your appearance here, what's your take on this, on the legislation? Does it go far enough?
So yes, I do provide volunteer support to the policy team of ND10 Black Lives Matter. Does the legislation go far enough? I mean, you look at these things, it's good to see that it has broad support, that there was input from the community. What I will say is that these issues have been going on for much longer than this past summer. It's more than George Floyd. It's right here in Indianapolis. It's Strajan Reed was murdered right here in Indianapolis. It's Aaron Bailey here in Indianapolis. So I do want to add that context, and that it's not just something that's abstract happening elsewhere, that it's right here too.
And I would just add, and not putting words in your mouth, but I, since you are a volunteer policy advisor, I should point out that I've seen at least that the two leaders of Indy 10 Black Lives Matter, and by the way, that refers, I think, to the 10 founding members who, in the wake of the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, came together, in case people are wondering where Indy 10 is a reference to. But the leaders of that group, I believe, have said the time for talk and reform or enhancement is over. It's time to move toward abolition of police agencies. Again, I'm not suggesting that's your point, but just to put that in context of where Indy 10 Black Lives Matter is coming from. And Greg Sturwald, one thing that we haven't heard in this whole debate, aside perhaps from this notion of the notion of abolition, which is the term that the leadership of that organization uses, so many other states and municipalities elsewhere, it's been defund police, defund police, defund police. I really haven't heard that anywhere. How helpful, let me back up and say, was that helpful that nobody came to the table early on and, you know, demanding that police agencies be tossed aside in favor of maybe some sort of social service component?
Yeah, I was very thankful. I didn't hear from anybody or any groups any discussion about defund the police. It was always a very positive discussion. It was always very supportive of the things we need to do better. But there was never discussions about defunding the police.
And nobody, as far as I know, in the caucus came forth, Robin Shackelford, with any suggestion that that's something that needed to occur.
So I will say that we did sit down with ND10. We sat down with several of the protesters. That was on their agenda. But when we spoke to them, we said that wouldn't be on our agenda. We don't feel that we should be defunding the police. What we did agree upon is putting more money in those social services, putting more money into the services, the mental health, the psychology services for the kids in school. Also, we supported they wanted to see a change with the resource officers and law enforcement at the schools. So we supported two bills, one providing additional training to law enforcement if you're going to be in a school, because currently you can be a law enforcement but not have that extra training that SROs have to take. And then the other bill was to totally fund a separate support team for students when we're talking about mental health, the nurses, psychiatrists, because our ratios are so low. So you'll see two bills for that. But when you say, does 1006 go far enough, I would say it is an awesome start. It is a great compromise, but that's why we have 36 other bills, because there's plenty more that needs to be worked on.
Interesting, though, that you have, and you said this even this week in your news conference, you want to see, ideally, this bill go through unchanged.
Correct.
You don't want to see this bill amended with the other 30, let's say other 35 bills that you had put forth.
Correct.
And that's a strategic move on the part of the caucus to keep this effectively clean and not get bogged down? Is that?
Yes, I would say on both caucuses and on the authors, because the bill is moving, we have several members that now want to attach either their bills or amendments. And because we worked so hard during the summer and came up with these compromises, you will have to go back and vet all of those ideas and see, is it okay with law enforcement, with the prosecutors, with the judges, with the communities, which there's no time to do in this short time frame. So for that bill, it needs to stay the way it is, and then we'll work on the other bills.
Mitch Gores, does this bill have what you think it needs to have? I mean, again, we could talk about other sorts of things, no-knock warrants. We could talk about mental testing for officers who have been in stressful situations in police-involved shootings, for instance. There are a lot of other sorts of oversight commissions that have been proposed. Does this, in your estimation, is this the package that gets the job done?
Yeah, I unequivocally agree with Representative Shackelford. This is an incredible jumping-off point. The work that Representative Steuerwald and Representative Shackelford did this past summer leading up to this point is commendable. And while I think we all have ideas for little tweaks or things we'd like to get in there, I would have to agree that this isn't – I don't want to jeopardize the tremendous progress made in this legislation by muddying the legislation by adding amendments that haven't been vetted yet. So I think we all have little things we'd like to do to it, minor things, but I think this is a great place to start.
Samantha Murrum, you're not a member of the General Assembly, so you don't have to worry about the mechanics and the machinations of the process. You, I'm guessing, if you had your magic wand, would tweak this bill or fold into it some of the other measures that you'd like to see happen in this regard.
Right. So, yes, as a non-elected official, I don't have to worry about what's politically feasible. You know, Indy 10, Black Lives Matter, that's not at the forefront of their mind when they're calling for the changes that they want to see. I think, as Representative Shackelford pointed out, the calls to defund the police, a lot of it are rooted in some of these other social services need to be better funded when you look at how our police departments are funded versus education and some other things like those should be getting the same amount, if not more, funding to address some of the issues that are being addressed by policing and maybe inadequately by policing.
So the notion being that if you address some of the poverty issues, if you address some of the unemployment, if you address some of the concerns about housing and looming evictions, that would go toward maybe eradicating some of the criminal activity. Is that a
fair assessment? Which is why we are pushing really hard to get Senate Bill 350, a hearing, which was authored by Senator J.D. Ford. It would provide an attorney to indigent people in small claims courts, specifically people facing evictions through a pilot program in Marion County. The laws that we have to protect tenants in Indiana, which there aren't many, they're only helpful if you know how to assert those laws, if you know how to assert your rights that are protected by those laws, which that's why it's helpful to have an attorney and why this law would be helpful. In Marion County, one of the most common reasons people are evicted is for failure to pay rent. The eviction crisis was at an emergency level prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. You know, people have been losing their jobs. Economic issues have only increased since then. So this bill, it's not an end-all, cure-all, but it's a way to help right here in Marion County. It's a step forward to help people legally keep their homes. So we are really pushing Senate Bill 350 and are trying to get it a hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee.
And guess, Robin Shackelford, following up on this point, some of the other bills that the caucus has put forth are about this sort of from the same school of thought, that you address some of the challenges that kids face in school. One of the bills that you talked about yesterday is this notion of additional support structure system for young people. Can you have the law enforcement reform without the other stuff? Are they complementary or mutually dependent in some way?
So to me, the law enforcement part is the outcome. The crime is the outcome. And I always say we need to work on the preventive part and the outcome part, the afterthought. The whole law enforcement, that piece we're working on, we've agreed upon, but it's the preventive part, the housing, the evictions, the more education, more money for education, more economic development in our underserved areas, addressing food deserts. So there's so much on this preventative part that we're not addressing that we've been pushing for years. You'll see us pushing it again while we're going to do a separate agenda for health disparities. We did a whole task force this summer because COVID just highlighted a lot of those disparities. But until we can agree upon a lot of the preventive parts and work on those, we're just going to be putting a Band-Aid and working on the afterthought part, which is needed, but we have to work on this side also.
And Greg Steerwalt, back to 1006, I'm good. This is probably like asking you to pick your favorite child or something, but of the half a dozen or so measures, that, and you've kind of touched on it broadly on a few of them, what's going to have the biggest impact, the most immediate impact? Which provision of the bill do you think?
Well, I think it always begins with training. So,
this is de-escalation training. Everybody would have, whether you're a rookie cop or in training in the academy, or even if you've been on the force for 30 years, when your time comes up, you have to go through de-escalation training.
That's correct. They already have a de-escalation program at the academy, but it's not uncommon for us to take what is in practice and put in statute. But de-escalation will be a major part of the training. It all stems from there. That's more of a long-term effect that's going to happen. I think this ability to open up employment records for hiring agencies to ask the previous agency the personnel file of the officer and the ability for the authority to bring or file with the ILEA decertification program.
Which is, again, the Law Enforcement Training Academy and the board. That they would have the ability to, just as they have the ability to certify officers under this bill, they'd have the ability to basically yank the badge as well.
That's exactly right. And law enforcement agreed we need to expand the criteria upon which an officer can be decertified, which we put in the bill. So I think that's going to have more of an immediate effect. And then the others will be more of a long-range effect.
And another one we should point out is, and I guess this has to do with training too, is that chokeholds would be viewed legally as use of deadly force. So it's only under the officer who engages in that, if he or she feels necessary, would have to answer effectively the same questions as if that officer had pulled a gun and fired.
That's great.
At the officer.
We define chokeholds as deadly force, same as if you use a firearm.
And let me ask you the same question, Mitch Gore. What do you think is going to have the biggest impact in the short term?
I think the ability to decertify law enforcement officers engaged in misconduct is going to be the best part of this legislation. And as Representative Steerwalt mentioned, the ability to trace those bad actors should they try to jump to a different agency, which happens all the time.
Because right now, you may not be directly involved in hiring the HR component, but I'm sure you've heard anecdotally somebody will say, hey, this applicant looked good on paper, but, I mean, have you run into that in the agency?
Yeah, absolutely. I think every agency runs into that. You'll have an applicant, you'll call up the last agency, you may even have a funny feeling, but you don't have any concrete proof because the personnel file won't come to you in full. The ability to trace these people as they try to hop around agencies or to just yank their certification from the outset is absolutely pivotal.
And let me ask, we're almost out of time here. I can't believe how fast time always goes. But is this a one-time fix or is this just, certain issues we seem to be back, like education reform. I can't think of a year we haven't had, some education. Is this, Robin Shackelford, is this going to be a perennial discussion from here on out in terms of improvement?
I think it will. I don't think it's a one-time fix. I think what happened this summer was monumental, and a lot of people want to see change. We're not going to be able to get that all done in 4 months. So we will continue to have conversations over next summer and throughout next session. But I think, as Steerwalt is shaking his head, the members see there's a lot that needs to be changed, and they're willing to make the change.
And we can all hope that there aren't any headline-making events of the nature that we discussed that provoke further action, it can be more of a reason tweaking or fine-tuning of the bill. I think we can all hope for that. Thank you for taking part in what I think has been a very informative discussion about a bill, certainly, that impacts all Hoosiers, potentially. Again, my guests have been Republican Representative Greg Storwald of Avon, Democratic Representative Robin Shackelford of Indianapolis, Democratic Representative Mitch Gore of Indianapolis, and Samantha Baran, a graduate student at IUPUI. Thank you. You've heard the saying about absolute power. What if the governor's emergency powers were on a time limit? The clock's ticking on the next Indiana lawmakers. Time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana lawmakers analyst Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hanna News Service. Ed, how unusual is it for a bill to have this kind of broad support at this point in the session?
Well, for a bill in general, it's certainly not unusual, but for a bill like this that has so many controversial elements and requires the majority and minority and a couple of different senses here to come together, you know, it is a difficult thing to get. You know, when you've got such a sensitive issue, it's very unusual for this to happen. But we also saw something related to this happen a few years ago with Representative Storwald, again, kind of honchoing things, and that was the criminal expungement legislation, the thing that allowed people to get felonies off of their records. And he managed to shepherd that through. But one thing that we did see with that legislation, John, was that, you know, we saw a clean bill kind of go through, and then we spent the next couple of sessions changing that and tweaking it. And when the courts started dealing with it, we realized that there were some other problems with it, and the legislature had to come back and continue to address that.
Let me ask you, it raises the question about keeping a quote-unquote clean bill. We heard Robin Shackelford say, and she said this week at her news conference, we want to keep this just as it is right now. How realistic is that?
Well, I think that it'll probably go through the House fairly clean, but when it gets over to the Senate, I think you'll see some attempts to amend things. Senator Greg Taylor, the Senate Democratic leader, was also participating in the same press conference with Representative Shackelford earlier in the week, and I think he'd like to see a little bit more of an affirmative kind of ban on chokeholds rather than just a review of some of those things. He's real concerned about the accountability measures in this particular piece of legislation. I think that he may also try to make a few changes on the Senate floor. It'll be difficult for him to get that through, though.
I was going
to
ask if he may have the appetite for it, but I wonder if the supermajority in the Senate shares his sentiments, that you say that might be a little tougher.
Absolutely. But we're going to see tweaks to this over the years.
Well, and sadly, I'm guessing the issue doesn't go away overnight, despite the best efforts of lawmakers. Ed Feigenbaum, as always, we appreciate your insight. Thanks much. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media and Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit wfyi.org for more State House news. Until next week, take care.